Okay, good morning, good vach. Welcome back to our shiur here in the valley at Shari Tzedek. We're continuing with the tshuvas of Rav Asher Weiss that we are learning through over the past couple months already, and we are continuing to look at his tshuvas and learning them together. Just I think I say this disclaimer once in a while, so I'll just say it again this time. The disclaimer is that this is not definitely not, I'm definitely not offering psak halacha, definitely a pasking shailas here. But even more than that, it's not even a halacha shiur per se. We're not coming to these shiurim to try to come to conclusions of the halacha. We're simply trying to understand the process of the halacha. And we're doing that last time by way of Rotsi Pesach Frank's tshuvas, now by the way of the tshuvas of Rav Asher Weiss. So we're trying to learn the style of psak and the way that he addresses a question, but it's not in order to answer the shailas for us practically. The shiur today is sponsored by a close friend, Rabbi Seeger. This comes full circle for you also. It's sponsored by Dubin and Marcella Hannon. And that's a close friends of mine. It's sponsored by Lili Nishmas Shmuel Ben Ruvain Eitan, whose yard site, I believe, is this week in just a few days. And that's the son of two very, very dear friends of mine, very important people in my life. So it's a very meaningful sponsorship overall. I think that the Hannon's also sponsored in honor of the YU Kollel, but that's a little bit less important than the Ilan Ishmas Shmuel Ben Ruvain Eitan. So we learn, and we hope that the Divrei Torah are a takan aliyah for his neshama. In the second volume of Minchas Asher in the Tshuvas, so in Simin Yud Ches, the Tshuvas will reference Simin Yud Zayin right before this, and maybe even Simin Yud Ches right after this as well. They go hand in hand. But the Rav Asher Weiss is dealing with an interesting question. It's not really a shaila, meaning he's not asked the shaila. He's just starting on the topic. But you'll see, he talks about a whole bunch of shailas that are very relevant to all of us in one way or another. The Gemara that he begins with is the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Vav. The Gemara there says that if a person drinks oil, and we'll see in a second in a specific way, he should make a bracha. So the Gemara says, what's the case? If you look in the second line, in the very beginning, the intended part, HaChayshish B'Groina, someone who feels a little bit of a tickle in their throat, they feel a sore throat or something like that, and they want to put oil down there in order to smoothen it up. So the HaChayshish B'Groina, Lo Yira Enu B'Shem and Tchila B'Shabbos. Don't gargle oil on Shabbos. It's like a refuah issue, which I think we spoke about refuah here a few weeks ago. But you can put a bunch of oil, a whole bunch of oil that's going to be helpful for your throat, into a mixture with anigron. Anigron, I think that the Jastro definition is garum. People know what garum is? Something very sweet, some sort of syrupy thing. So you're going to mix it together with something sweet, something more delectable. Uvoleya. And then you can swallow it. You don't want to gargle it and show that you're doing a refu on Shabbos, but you're boleya. You swallow it, so it looks like you're eating. So that's going to be the case that we're talking about. Kshita, it's obvious that you're going to make a bracha on that, right? You're drinking food. You're eating food. No. Mao the same, you might have thought, and here's the important part for us. Kevin de la refua kamechavein. Why are you drinking this oil mixture? What's it for? For your throat. Not because you enjoy drinking sweet oil, but because your throat hurts. So kevin de la refua kamechavein. This is the whole reason you're doing this, is for healing purposes. Lo liver chalei klal. So maybe it doesn't deserve a bracha at all. It's not food. You're just doing it for refua, for healing. Lo liver chalei klal. Don't make a bracha. Kamash milan kevin de islei hana minei. No, since you're getting hana'a, since you're gaining benefit, you're actually going to enjoy this. That's true. The reason, the motivation, is that I want to heal myself, and therefore I'm drinking this this oil. But the advantage is also, the result is going to be that I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be gishmak for me. It's going to be tasty, since I mixed it with the sweet stuff. So then I still make a bracha. That's the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Vav. Does that make sense so far? That's the Gemara. Just the explanation here in the first line in the bold. Hare lan dechol achila sheyesh bahana. When do you make brachos? When you eat food and you enjoy it. Even if you're eating it for a different reason, you're eating it for, it's an ulterior motive. You're doing it because you want to heal your throat. Even so, you enjoy the food, you make a bracha beforehand, that's a bracha. You make a shakal, whatever the bracha is, that's a different discussion. But you make a bracha on the food that you're eating. And he says, that's the psak halacha and the shulchan aruch and simin reish dalid sif ches. So that's easy enough, fine. Says Rav Asher, though, he's always been bothered, me'odi niskashisi, in the next paragraph, he's always been bothered how this gemara shtims. How does it go together? How does it work with a different gemara? The Gemara says in Brachos on Yud Dalet, again, in the second paragraph here, in the not bold yet, Hamat emes p'tura me bracha. So you have someone who's cooking in the kitchen on, whatever, on Erev Shabbos, and they're making the cholent, and they want to make sure that the cholent tastes just right. So they take a little bit of the cholent, they lick it. They lick the cholent on the spoon, and then they use a different spoon to put it back on. Just to be clear, they then put a different spoon back into the mixture. Otherwise, please don't invite me over. So they lick the spoon a little bit just to see the soup. They want to see if the soup is good, so they slurp a little bit, and they just want to taste it. So they're just tasting the food. They're not eating. They're going to get full right now. They're not interested in having a meal, but they're just tasting it. So do you make a bracha or not? So the Gemara says, Hamat emes p'tura mi bracha. So does that make sense? That you should be p'tura from bracha, exempt from bracha? Yeah, I mean, you're just tasting. You're not eating. Huh?
But you're getting that now.
You're getting a benefit, but you're not eating, right? Meaning you also get benefit from, I'm a very handsome person. You're looking at me right now. You're probably enjoying it. I know you. You're enjoying it. So but you don't make a bracha, or maybe you did already. But most people don't make a bracha on that, right? You get benefit from when you turn on the lights in the morning. Because you don't, even though the Gemara says, that someone who gets hana from this world without making a bracha, is kilu they stole from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then Chazal told us which hana'as you make a bracha on. So if you just get the benefit of the taste without the eating, you could hear that you don't make a bracha. Okay, it's different in that way. We'll come back to your point, but it's different in that way. Yeah, so we're on the same page. However, the Rishonim here, the commentaries in the Gemara, have a dispute as to what exactly this matemis is all about. What exactly is this person doing when they taste the soup, when they taste the cholent? I don't know what the norm is, by the way. If people taste the soup on Erev Shabbos, do they usually, what do? They lick it, they drink a little bit of it. I think usually people swallow a little bit, right? You slurp a little bit and you swallow it. Yeah, you with the big ladle, exactly. You just I would waterfall it. I wouldn't put it in my mouth. So says the Rishonim like this, V'nechul Guha Rishonim, look again where we're reading. Impater rak bepole o af beboleya. There are two possibilities. It could be that the person licks the spoon and then says, good, it tastes right. It also could be that they take a little bit of a taste, meaning they take a bite or they take a slurp of the soup and they swallow it. Are they polite or are they bolea? Do they spit it out or are they swallowing it? Das Tosfos sham v'harash depater rak bepoli. Says Tosfos and the Rush, you're only pater from a bracha, you're only exempt from a bracha, in which case? If you taste it and you spit it out, you don't actually swallow it. But if you actually swallow it, Tosfos say, then of course you have to make a bracha. Why? You get hana and you're eating it. Well, there's no difference. It's between every other case. So if you taste it and you eat it, even though you have in mind, you're intending only to taste it, not to actually enjoy a whole meal over here, doesn't matter. You have the smallest amount of food. You have to make a bracha. You taste it and swallow. That's regular eating. One second, let me just get through the Rambam. Ahdas HaRambam. However, the Rambam disagrees with this opinion of Tosfos. The Rambam says, now we're in the bold here in the second paragraph, Ahdas HaRambam, the af haboleya pater milavarech. Whoa. The Rambam says that even if you're sitting there Erev Shabbos, you want to taste the soup, you slurp a little bit and you swallow it, even so, no bracha. Nope. What do you mean? You just ate a spoon of soup. So we'll say, the Rambam, das yachad, the Rambam's always on his own. He's always doing his own thing. Yeah, but except that the Cheni b'Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch passes this way as well. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that it's two opinions, but he assumes like the Rambam, and the Rama comments over there that since it's two opinions and the Rambam is one of them, Safik brachos lahakel, and therefore we would actually agree halach lemaisa for a different reason, but Ashkenazim would agree halach lemaisa practically that you don't make a bracha in such a case because it's a machlokas, because it's a dispute and we don't want to use Hashem's name in vain. But the Rambam's opinion is that way. The Rambam's opinion is that even if you're tasting it and swallowing it, then you don't make a bracha. You don't make a bracha. Yeah, what do you want to ask?
You
want to
know what the Sheyes are all really do.
I don't actually care, no.
Yeah. I always say a bracha because if it's good, I might have another bite.
Okay.
And if it's not good and I have to salt it, then I certainly have to
have
another bite.
Right. Yeah, I have this issue with bracha achrona. Whenever someone shares their food with me, I always ask for a little bit more just to make sure I can make a bracha achrona. You always want
to
make sure you have enough.
Yeah. I used
to
tell that to my
mother.
There you
go. Exactly. You need to make sure you have enough. So, if you didn't need a bracha and you made a bracha, it would be an issue of bracha b'tala. Correct. According to the Rambam, it would be. So Rabash Weiss here says, okay, so we have two gemaras. One says that if you drink this oil mixture, even though you're doing it for refuah, for healing purposes, since you're going to enjoy it, so you're chayiv in a bracha. And then you have this Rambam, which tells you, yeah, but when you eat, when you just taste some food, even though you're swallowing it and enjoying it, you don't make a bracha. So Rav Asher Weiss says, I don't understand. How do those two gemaras go together? Ulachar kal v'chomer, if anything, it's more necessary to make a bracha in the second case. You make an oil sweet, syrup mixture, and you're doing it just for healing, so you have no interest in eating this food whatsoever. You're just doing it for your throat, and there you do make a bracha. So for sure, all the more so in a case where you're eating soup, you're just eating a little bit, and you're just doing it to taste. But you're eating the soup, of course you should make a bracha, even more so than the first case. For sure you have to make a bracha if you swallow the food. So what is going on, says Rashi Weiss, between these two Gemaras? Rav Asher answers, the shiny mat emes. There's a difference between the case of, let's say, eating something in order to heal, and the person in the kitchen who's tasting the food. She'ein bo kavanas achila klal. What does that mean? The person who's tasting the food has no intent to eat at all. Although physically it's the same action, it mimics the same, right? You're putting it in your mouth and you're swallowing. It's the same thing, but that's not called eating, right? That's not called eating, exactly. You don't intend to eat. You intend simply to taste the food, to check to make sure that it's tasty. Tam amaychel b'lashon v'cheich, to make sure that it's good on the palate. Cheich means palate. That the tongue, it feels good when it touches it, and the palate enjoys the taste. Ella what? Let's say you were sitting in the kitchen Erev Shabbos, and I was a guest by your house, and you're, I need to taste the soup. And you go, you slurp the soup. You ever watch coffee people taste the coffee? Real coffee people, like snobs. So they, the way they do it, the way I do it is I also like take my coffee seriously. But I, first of all, I'm alone, so it doesn't matter what I do, because you will never see me. But second of all, I make a hot cup of coffee, and I drink it, and I enjoy it. I mean, I make a black coffee, and I get nice grounds, but that's about it. But a real coffee person, they let the coffee sit in the grounds for a little bit. Cupping, you know what cupping is? They let the grounds and the coffee sit together for a little bit, not even necessarily so hot. Adarava, not so hot, because I think it's harder to taste things when it's hot. You want it to be a little cooler to taste it. They take a little cupping spoon, special spoon, gaiva, right? Such gaiva. You have your own spoon for slurping coffee? It's gaiva. But so they take a little coffee spoon, they go, they slurp it. Why do you slurp it? No, you want to hit all the parts of your palate. You want to spread it across the entire mouth to get the whole experience. And then they have enjoyed the coffee. You ever see a wine connoisseur drink wine? So a guy who likes wine, drinks wine, swishes it around his mouth, and then swallows it. What does a wine connoisseur do, though? They don't swallow the wine. They spit it out. Okay, so LMI, if I'm at your house on Friday afternoon, and you go to your soup, I probably won't eat anything by your house that time, right? If you spit it right out, because that's disgusting. That's disgusting. Nobody wants to see you spit things out. So the person in the kitchen on Erev Shabbos has manners. They have some dignity. So instead of slurping and spitting it out, they swallow it. But why do they swallow it? Not because they want to eat the soup. Not because they want to taste it right now in their throat. But because it's weird to spit it out. It's gross to spit it out. The connoisseur does it, but the connoisseur has a special like spitting cup also, right? They carry around two cups. It's disgusting. The whole thing's disgusting. But so we'll get back to wine being disgusting soon, hopefully. So says the Rashi Weiss, El dekeven she'enze midas derech eretz. This is not proper manners. Liflot ochel misoch piv. That to just spit things out here and there. So no, al karcho bolea. Therefore, he's forced to swallow the food. But you're not eating the food. You're tasting the food. In a perfect world, you would just put it on your tongue and spit it out. But you're not going to do that in your kitchen on Friday afternoon. You're going to swallow it. So says Rashi Weiss, you see there's a significant fundamental difference over here. When it comes to the person who's drinking the oil with the sweet stuff, so they are intending to eat it in a way of healing. They are intending to swallow the food in order to heal themselves, but they're doing the same process of eating, the same process of achila. In the case of tasting the food on Erev Shabbos in the kitchen, you're tasting it in order to taste it. Ideally, you would spit it out, but you have nowhere to put it, so you just swallow it. It's like the kids when they're younger, and they don't know where to put the gum, so the normal kids would stick it under the desk so that next year you could find their gum. But the less normal kids would swallow it. They'd swallow the gum, right? Why? Because they wanted to swallow the gum? No, they just had nowhere to put it. So they swallowed, and that was what they did. I don't know. We should do a study on what happened to them later. What happens to gum? Does it ever it just stays there, right? It just stays there forever. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's true. So, I don't really think that's true. Just for the recording, I don't actually believe that. Now, next paragraph. Amnam Ra'isi, says Rav Asher Weiss. Amnam Ra'isi, I saw the Mincha Shlomo, which is the Sefer of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I saw Rav Shlomo Zalman was Niskashe, that's a typo, Kanal, as we just had this issue. Vikasav, Rav Shlomo Zalman had the same question, he gave a different answer. He said, that Tzarech Lomer L'das Rambam, you need to say that the Rambam is saying something different. Degam Be'ochel L'Shem Refua, Eino Chayev Levarech, Ela Kishim Eskavin Gam L'Shem Hanas Achila. So Rav Asher Weiss says, you could have answered differently. We have two Gemaras. One says that when you eat this oil for healing purposes, you do make a bracha. The other Gemara says when you taste food on Erev Shabbos, you don't make a bracha. What do you do with that? So Rav Asher Weiss told us, no, they're different. They're fundamentally different. When you eat medicine, we're using that term loosely right now, when you eat medicine, you're eating. and it's going to heal you. When you taste food and swallow it, you're not eating. You just have nowhere to put the food, so you swallow it. Says the Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I have a different answer. A different answer. Maybe the Rambam the whole time only meant that when you eat the food of refuah, when you swallow that oil, you're doing it with in mind that you want to enjoy the food. Again, just a mashal, not exact. But when a person has a sore throat and they decide to have a cup of tea or with honey or chicken soup or something, so they want to heal themselves, which is why they're eating it, but they're also intending to enjoy the food. They're also intending to eat it in an enjoyable manner. So maybe the Rambam was just saying, in a case where you're drinking the oil in order to heal, you're also enjoying it. You're also eating it in a way that you want to have it as food. In the case of tasting in the kitchen, you're not doing so. It's dependent on intention. Rav Asher Weiss, he gives proof. We put it in the dots. But if you would expand those ellipses, you would find the proofs that he gives. But he basically says the Rambam does clearly doesn't mean that. The Gemaras clearly don't mean that. And he thinks Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's answer is inadequate. And he thinks his answer is more correct. Now, continuing, he says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a different question. Shinis Kasha, in the next paragraph, Oad, Masha Kasvar Ramah. Yeah.
Isn't the prerequisite of the Gemara's case required that you're eating it for some extent for Hanukkah, though? That's the whole
heter
to eat it.
No. I'm sorry.
Isn't the whole heter to eat it?
No.
You're not really doing
correct.
You're doing it to eat it?
The license to do so is the fact that you will get hana. That doesn't tell us why you're doing it. It tells us about the result, not the motivation. Right?
Even though the person is saying that he's...
No, he can't. He may not be allowed to express it out loud.
Whatsoever.
Right, he may not be allowed to express it actively. Right, that's what it seems. That's all you know from the Gemara. That's all you know from the Gemara, yeah. It has to be normal enough. It can't be like, you can't pretend that you enjoy drinking Robitussin. And Robitussin's gross, right? That's the one that's gross. Because some of them I do enjoy. Just I don't think Robitussin I enjoy. So you can't pretend that you enjoy drinking Robitussin and say, no, this is my, what do you mean? You're having schnapps and I'm having Robitussin by the Kiddush Club. You know, you can't pull that one off. But if it's something that's in the realm of normal, then you can enjoy it. So even though you're doing it for refuah purposes, completely for refuah purposes, but it's normal enough and you're enjoying it, then you would make a bracha, and also the license to do so on Shabbos is related. Yeah. Robitussin by a Kiddush Club actually sounds like not a bad idea. I didn't think of that till now.
Robitussin with codeine.
The one with codeine, maybe a little bit, yeah. Yeah. I hear that. It's a cheaper option or no? Yeah. How much a bottle of Robitussin costs at CVS? Not
$50.
Right. Okay, it's something to think about. My wife's a pharmacist. I could ask her for a special. Okay, Shiniskasha Ode. So he says the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had another question. The Rama writes, the Misha Anso Oso, Le'echol, someone who is forced to eat. Someone holds a gun to my head and says, eat. Pater mi bracha. He is exempt from making a bracha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is bothered. Mai shnami misha achol refuah. Why is that any different than someone who needs to eat to heal their throat? Let's say someone has a sore throat. They're not hungry. They're not interested in eating right now, but their throat hurts. So they need to drink this oil mixture or whatever. Or more dire circumstances. Someone is rachman al tzlan, you know, gonna die unless they eat something. So they eat in order to stay alive. So they're not eating for enjoyment. They're eating only because they're forced to. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, if the Rama tells us that if you're forced to eat, then you don't have to make a bracha. So then why is a person who eats for refuah, for healing purposes, make a bracha like the Gemara says? Isn't that strange? You're only eating because your hands are tied. You're only eating because your throat is hurting you. You're not eating for your own desires. So so Rav Asher Weiss here gives an answer and he explains that there's a difference. There's a difference. When you have a case where someone's holding a gun to your head and he forces you to eat, that's not considered an action in halacha. We have this in many other places in halacha as well. It's not considered an action if a person is forced. It's called ones rachmana patre. It means that a person who is forced into doing something, it's as if they didn't do it halachically. Very interesting discussion whether you need to even do tshuva. Let's say a person is forced to do an aveira, and then comes Yom Kippur time, they want to know what they should do tshuva for. So do you have to do tshuva, repent for an aveira that you did by force because you were forced to do so? That's a discussion in the poskim. There's one glaring raya for this one direction. When we clap chet on Yom Kippur, we say al chet shechatana lufenecha, etc. We say be'ones uveratzon. So one of the things we say I'm sorry for is things we were forced into doing. So you have to explain why that would be true. But generally speaking, the pasuk says ulanara losasa davar, that we don't punish someone. We don't punish them, and also they're not held accountable for an act which they were forced into doing. So if someone holds a gun to my head, or someone force feeds me, literally, some sort of food, so then that's not considered eating. Not clear when a Jewish mother makes a person try their cooking, whether that counts as force feeding or not. I'm not sure. That's a halachic debate. But those types of things would be considered forced. Or Amal would say you don't make a bracha because that's not called eating. But if a person decides to eat in order to heal themselves, even though they are so to speak, forced, meaning they need to heal themselves. But there's no one forcing them to do it from the outside. It's not external. It's internal. It's minafshe. It's on their own. So even though it's for an ulterior motive of healing themselves, even so, that's considered eating and you would make a bracha. That's how Rav Asher Weiss explains away that Ramah and says not really an issue. However, and this is where I think it gets really interesting and practical, if you look right before the Os Beis, so the third to final paragraph, a little two-line paragraph in the bold, Umishum kach nira pashet. He says, now it becomes obvious, Demisha ochel l'shem mitzvah, v'ein kavanaso lahanas achila klal. It's Tesvav Nisan, and I am hungry for meat, but instead I have a little bit of a forespice, a little bit of an appetizer of this crunchy, you know, tasteless cracker, matzah. So why am I eating that matzah? Because I'm hungry? No. I mean, it could be it fills you up, but that's not why I'm eating it. Why am I eating the matzah? Because I absolutely have to, because the Torah says that I have to. I have to eat a certain amount, and I have to do it right now. So I'm eating the matzah for that reason. I am forced to by the Torah. I don't want to, and I still make a hamotzi. Yeah, I mean, you make a bris mitzvah too, and you make a hamotzi, and you make a hamotzi. Or, says Rav Asher Weiss, kigon shtias yayin, bekiddush v'avdalah. I don't like wine, personally. I don't like wine. I mean, I don't even enjoy kiddush wine all that much. I don't like dry wine for sure. But on Shabbos, by the meal, I have to make Kiddush. And after Shabbos, I have to make Abdallah. So I'm going to have a revius of wine. So, vaday chayv bebracha. Even so, I make a hagafen. What do you mean? I'm drinking something that I'm forced to drink. I'm drinking something I'm not interested in drinking at all. No, kem de mikol makom nene, since you're getting some enjoyment. Now, you can ask a question in a second whether I'm getting enjoyment. But, and let's use a different case. Someone who does enjoy wine, but they're not in the mood right now, but they have to for Kiddush, and they drink it. So they end up enjoying it. Matzah. You don't want matzah, but it's not. I mean, some people dislike it, but I don't dislike matzah. I'm just not in the mood for it. But once you eat it, it's fine. It fills you up. It's enjoyable. It's fine. It's a cracker. It's okay. It's not so bad. So once you're getting hana from it, then obviously you make a bracha, and that's just like the case of refuah, that you're forced, so to speak, to do it internally. You have to do it because the Ribbono Shel Olam told you to, but no one's holding a gun to your head. You're not forced in that sense that it's not considered an action. It is an action, and I'm enjoying it. It's just like the Shemen with the Anigron, and therefore you make a bracha on it. Fine. So that's so we're all good so far. Yeah? Okay. What if you don't enjoy it?
So let's. You're getting a benefit.
I'm sorry?
You're getting a benefit.
Absolutely. You're getting a benefit of?
The
right, no, so that's an interesting point, is that every time you do the mitzvah. But I think the benefit has to be a physical benefit of taste, but or satiation. But you're still correct, meaning you get those benefits too. But and it's interesting that you do get the benefit of the mitzvah as well, yes. Os Beis, the second last paragraph, Elish Niskashesi, says the Rosh Weiss, so many problems, he's got so many issues here. Elish Niskashesi, I have another issue, Mitam Acher. Don't you have a lot of people like me who hate wine? They don't enjoy wine? And yet they have to make Kiddush every single week and drink the wine. They don't enjoy it at all. So it's not just that you're forced to do it and then you're going to get benefit, but rather you're forced to do it and then you're not going to get benefit. You're not going to enjoy it. You're not going to have any geschmack from the wine that you're drinking.
Because hanah doesn't necessarily have to be...
It has to be physical. I think it has to be physical, yeah. Meaning it's also tangentially true that you'll get the benefit of the mitzvah. That's true. But you have to get a taste or a satiation from the food. We'll talk about, if we have time, we'll talk about what the hana is defined as. It has to be a hana in your throat or hana in your innards, yeah, meaning satiation.
Maybe we use the word loosely, but when we see our kids or grandkids running around, we get a hana from that.
For sure.
So
and
is that,
for
is
sure.
That technically physical or is it spiritual, emotional? What is it?
Well, I think that's more for like for a psychology class afterwards. I don't know. I'm not ready. I wasn't prepared for this. I majored in Jewish studies. I don't like that. Yeah, correct. But these are different areas. You're right. There are different areas of hana. I mean, you get getting benefit from treif, for example. I'm sorry. Getting benefit from bas b'challah, like you said, is a problem of isser hana. That is correct. Hana is in different categories of halacha, defined differently. So in this area of halacha, hana means you make a bracha on taste or you make a bracha on satiation. You know, even you know if you saw a piece of challah. This Shabbos, I brought out the challah. It's the first time anyone ever did this, and they said, "Wow, it's braided so beautifully." No one ever says that. Usually, you say it's doughy, it's nice, it tastes good, it doesn't taste good. People make those kind of comments at the table, but they said it's braided so beautifully. Okay, so
obviously, you have a problem braiding there.
So. Yeah, right. Exactly. A little self conscious. So it's braided beautifully. So imagine I'm gluten free. I'm not going to eat the challah, but it is braided so beautifully. Let me make a hamotzi on that braiding. No, in order to make a hamotzi, you have to eat the food, right? So the hana in this area of halacha has to be a physical hana. Of, again, we're going back and forth between taste and satiation. It has to be something physical that you gain from the food in terms of in your body. Okay. Says Rav Asher Weiss, Os Beis, Elish Niska Shesi Bezemit HaMacher, another issue. Oh, sorry, we already read this, right? That I'm not going to enjoy the wine at all. I hate wine. And now I have to drink it for Abdullah. I have to drink it for Kiddush. So I'm stuck drinking the wine. I'm forced into it. And I'm not even going to enjoy it. So it's not even like the Gemara about Refuah. So why am I making a bracha on this at all? And the Rav Asher Weiss correctly points out that a lot of people are in this situation. A lot of people feel that way. They have no interest in drinking wine. They're not even going to enjoy it when they have to. You know, depending on what I'm giving you, I could drink Kiddush wine and I'll be okay. But last Shabbos I was somewhere else, and they gave me grapes. I asked for wine for Kiddush, so they brought out wine, they poured it for me, and I drank, and I was like gagging afterwards. So there turns out there was multiple reasons why I was gagging. First of all, the wine was definitely spoiled. Second of all, when I cleaned out the cup afterwards, I saw that the people from 10 weeks before's wine was also still in there, caked in on the bottom. Like I would put a napkin in there and it would get thick wine in there. So there were definitely multiple reasons why it was so gross. But it happens to be if I was drinking wine, you know, on Purim when Nebuch, you know, you're forced to drink so much wine. So it's not enjoyable for me until at some point during the day it becomes more enjoyable. But the first cups are not enjoyable for me. Okay, so I don't enjoy it at all. So why am I making a bracha over here? Why am I making a bracha over here at all? Ach nirlaniyaz daiti she'ina dvar mamurim ela b'marush mitzar atzmo. Well, we'll skip the thing about Mara for right now. But near Bezelini has that to the bottom paragraph over here. The Ein Hadavar Taloi Ela B'Derech Achila. Says Rav Asher Weiss that the definition, halachically, the categorization over here of what requires a bracha is something which is done Derech Achila. Something which is normal to eat. You're eating it in a normal fashion. It's a normal process of achila. If you eat something or drink something in such a way that most people derive benefit from, even though you personally may not currently be deriving benefit from it, you do make a bracha. You do make a bracha. So if you're eating lettuce, I dislike lettuce very much. If you're eating lettuce,
what do you like?
I hear, but I also only mention lettuce and wine, so I don't really. But yeah, lettuce is gross to me. Like if my ideal salad is like a hamburger. So right, yeah, it's more of a Bugs thing. Yeah. So the Bugs are the only part I like about the lettuce. That's the thing. They take it out. You know, it's so gross. So, derech achila, you have to eat something the way that it's normally eaten. I don't like lettuce, but if I eat a salad and it has lettuce in it, I still make my bracha. I still make the same bracha. Why? I'm not enjoying it. No, but that's normal to eat this. You're not eating poison. You're not eating something that's objectively wrong to eat, objectively gross. It's something which is objectively fine. It's objectively food. So, you make a bracha because you're eating it in the normal way, even though you may personally not be enjoying it right at this very moment. You're still chayev levarich. And says Rav Asher Weiss, that's the pshat. When you have marah on Pesach night, no one enjoys, again, some people eat lettuce, and maybe they do enjoy it, but nobody enjoys grain, you know, straight. At least not the raw, you know, the raw type that's not dressed up a little bit. And if you do, different issues. But you still, you're eating a food that's a normal food. It's a normal food that you're eating. If you're eating, the lettuce, if you're drinking the wine for Kiddush, it's a normal type of food. You happen not to enjoy it, but it's still considered eating, just like the Gemara about Refuah. Rav Asher Weiss says, based on this, that he has an important hanhaga. If you flip over to page number 2, when you're by a chuppah, so the Rav stands under the chuppah and has the cup of wine that he gives to the chasen and the kala, or whatever the mother feeds it. They have a whole the minhag of which mother feeds it. You don't want to get involved in that. You want to stay out of that one. Whatever the mothers want to do. That and breaking the plate, it's up to them how they want to do it. But so the one of the mothers gives to one of the kids, and the other mother gives to the other kid, whichever direction it goes. So there's a cup of wine that everyone's making the brachas on. And then they're going to drink from the wine, correct? And the chasen and kala also take a sip from the take more than a sip from the wine, correct? Now, have you ever seen a chasen and kala make a brei pri agafen before they drink that wine? Huh? That is weird, right? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. You have it quoted from Rav Asher Weiss here on the top of page number 2. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that you don't really need a bracha for that wine. You don't really need a bracha for that wine. Why? You don't really need a bracha for that wine. Why not? Because you're not drinking the wine for any enjoyment whatsoever. You're drinking the wine because you're at your chuppah. You have to drink the wine. The mother-in-law is shoving down your throat. This is your first test. The mother-in-law is shoving the wine down your throat. You better drink it. You don't make a bracha on such a thing. You're not enjoying it whatsoever. You're just drinking the wine. So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you don't need a bracha on such wine, and don't worry about it whatsoever. However, Rav Asher Weiss says, that's tamua. That's crazy. That's strange. It's wild. Why would you say that? You're drinking wine. You might not be doing it for the reason of enjoying it right now. You may not even enjoy it. Maybe you don't like that kind of wine. but you're still drinking normal wine in the normal way. So why wouldn't you make a bracha? So says Rashi Weiss that no, instead you have to actually be yotzei. Someone did make a bracha b'rei pirag ofen, right? The rabbi made the bracha b'rei pirag ofen. So you should have in mind that you're being yotzei with the rabbi. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes explicitly that you don't need to have that in mind. You don't need a bracha over here. Rav Moshe Weiss says no, you do need to have that in mind because you're about to drink something and make a bracha on it, but you can't make the bracha. Okay, fine. So you have, you listen to the bracha of the rabbi and you say amen and yotzei with that. If you look in the bold, umishum kach noeg ani, because of this, I have the minhag to bechol chuppah, at every chuppah, letzavos ala chasen vahakala, lehazbir lahem, lechavim latzei sidei chovasam habracha, al yedei harav mesarek dushin, vechein roi linog. He says the right thing to do is you tell the chasen and kala, just to be clear, what I mean by you tell the chasen and kala, I mean is if you have the mesarek dushin, don't get involved in the chuppah if you're sitting in the audience, but if you're the mesarek dushin, you know, don't, I object, you guys got to listen to the bracha. Don't do one of those, you don't need that. You know, just if you're the mesarek dushin, you should tell the chasen and kala that they should listen to the bracha, they should say amen, they should have in mind that they want to be yotzei, and they'll drink the wine that way because it fits into the discussion we're having until now, that if you're drinking something in the normal way, even if it's for abnormal reasons, and even if you're personally not going to enjoy it, you still make the bracha on the food that you're eating. Yeah, ideally he would have the mind as well. I mean, Rav Asher Weiss does because he's the one telling them to do so, but yes, the one who's being motzi has to have the mind as well. Correct. Kabanas ha-motzi and ha-yotzei.
You were saying a joke about the mothers-in-law.
It wasn't a joke. It was advice. I used to be a chassan teacher. Yeah, right. No, because no, right. In that case, okay, maybe that's what I said before. That's tzarachin. I think the poskim don't have a clear conclusion on mothers-in-law. So I don't know. I remember this. I mean, this is not. It shouldn't be a gadol story, but it is. That's what, sometimes that's what makes a gadol story. I saw recently the. This is not related. Now this is just if you're keeping track at home. This is two tangents. We're in a tangent within a tangent right now. So there was the seventh Ger Rebbe whose name was the Pnei Menachem. The Pnei Menachem was, again, the first was the Chiddush Arim, then the Alexander Rebbe was the interim Rebbe, then the Sfas Emes, then the Imri Emes, then the two half brothers, the Leif Simcha and the Yismach Moshe, in opposite order, and then the Pnei Menachem. So the Pnei Menachem was like in the 90s. He was already an older man, but he took over the mantle of leadership for Ger late in life because his older brothers had the Kedimus. They came first. So anyways, there's a story. It's just such a moving story, but like I said, sometimes the simplest stories are the most moving. There was a family who was a Ger Hasidim, and in the middle of the night, one night, the grandmother in the household got very sick and needed to go to the hospital. So the mother and the father had to escort the grandmother to the hospital. However, there were children at home, old enough to be home alone, but young enough that they didn't want them to be nervous. So they wrote a note and left it on the counter that, you know, we took Bubby to the hospital. Everything's okay. You know, we'll hopefully be back tomorrow morning or something. And one of the younger children, one of the younger girls, woke up in the middle of the night. She saw her parents weren't there. She saw her Bubby wasn't there, and she was very frightened. She found the note on the table, and she said, okay, now she understands, but she's a little girl. So she was more nervous because her Bubby's in the hospital. So she started, like, you know, crying a little bit. She was nervous. She said, what do I do? What should I do? Like, how do I calm myself down? She said, what would my parents do? What would my parents do if they had some issue? So she said, my parents always go to the Rebbe. If there's some issue in the house, they call the Rebbe or they go visit the Rebbe in the Beis Medrash. So she took out a phone book. She found the Pnei Menachem's number. It was after midnight. And she called him at home. And he picked up the phone. And it was a little girl on the other line. She said, my mommy and daddy went to the hospital with Bubby. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. So the Ger Rebbe said, the Pnei Menachem said, don't worry. Your father called me before he left, because he always calls when there's an issue. I know about it. Everything's going to be okay. I'm not just saying that. Everything's going to be okay. And you don't have anything to worry about. Would you like me to read you a book before you go back to sleep so you can calm down? And she said to him on the phone, you've already calmed me down. I don't need a book. And like when you tell the story, when you read the story, you're like, okay, simple. Like it's nice to offer to read a book, but it's a gadol story. Why? Because gadolim notice the little things. They think through the little things, the heartwarming things that make all the difference. So totally unrelated and next to tangent. So there's a biography of my Rebbe's brother, Hashem Yikom Damo, Rav Moshe Tversky, who was killed in Har Nof, however many years ago it was, nine years ago. So they put out a biography of him, a fantastic biography. He's a really inspiring individual. So one of the stories they tell over there, if I recall correctly, is that when they had the chuppah, after he finished with the chuppah, after he drank the wine, he sat down. Everyone runs to the yichud room. He sat down. He sat down and he made a bracha achrona because he drank wine. Under the chuppah, he drank ravias, and he didn't make a bracha achrona. So it's a gadol story. It shouldn't be a gadol story. If someone drinks enough wine, they're supposed to make a bracha achrona, but we don't always have the presence of mind, like gadolim do, to think of the little things. It's not a little thing, it's a big thing to make a bracha. He sat down and he made the bracha achrona because he had the presence of mind to think about the halacha in all the different scenarios. Right, no. So that might be a reason to that might be a limud chus But, you know, chasanim do daven ma'irik, meaning we, but it's, you're right, it's a limud zchus that our heads are all over the place, but he had the presence of mind, that's why it makes him a gadol. Yeah. Okay, so the Rav Asher Weiss here says, I know, this is, I love when he says things like this, I know a lot of the poskim disagree with me, but I don't care. I know a lot of the poskim disagree with me, but I'm correct. And he says, here are three instances where this comes up, that it's important to realize this rule. You have it in the next paragraph with the three choppy bulls over here. First of all, ha-mesarech etzel chavero, v'hugash lo ochel she'ino ohiv klal. You're eating by someone's house, and they say, oh, you know, we're going to get to the meal, but first I want to serve you the soup course. I'm giving you borscht. And that's not something you enjoy. What's borscht? Is borscht beets or tomatoes?
Beets.
Beets. Yeah, definitely not. I don't like beets. Sorry. I know. There's nothing there. So definitely not going to enjoy that. But I'm not gonna say no thank you. I'm going to have to eat the first course. So what's the tomato? Oh, gazpacho. I don't like that either. Gazpacho. Someone served me that. Ooh, that was hard. But what I do, I sat there working my way through it and holding in the vomit. Because you didn't want to make the host feel bad. So you eat the food just to make them feel good. So do you make a bracha? It's disgusting. You're not enjoying it at all. You're forced to eat it. Do you make a bracha? What's the answer? Says the Rosh Weiss, yeah. You know why? Because some people do like borscht. It's normal to like borscht. It's normal to like gazpacho or whatever other disgusting inventions you come up with. So you'll eat it and you're not enjoying it, but still you make a bracha. It's a normal food. Two, let's say it's a cold day. It's a cold day. And you want to warm up. So you make yourself a hot cup of tea. You're not really interested in tea. You're not thirsty. You don't like tea. But it's what you had around the house. And it's hot. And it's warm in your hands. And it's warm in your body. So you drink it just to heat up. So do you make a bracha? So the truth is, some poskim say you do not. Some people poskim say you do not make a bracha. However, Rav Asher Weiss says, of course you do. It's tea. It's normal to eat this. It's normal to drink this. And therefore you make a bracha, even if you alter your motives for drinking it. Lastly, he says, let's say you're eating... I don't know. My father-in-law's on some crazy diet where he doesn't eat any. He doesn't eat any really meat, or it's called things called forks over knives. He doesn't eat any meat. He doesn't eat any stuff like that. He eats only and no oil. He only eats like chickpeas. Yeah, gazpacho. He only eats like chickpeas and cucumbers. So like he'll make a sandwich that's like fake bread, like, you know, I don't know, fake bread, but it's got a lot of healthy stuff in it. And then, you know, fake peanut butter, like sun butter from sunflower seeds. And then put cucumbers on that. I know. But okay, he claims he enjoys it. But I think we all know the truth. There's no way he enjoys that. There's no way he enjoys that. So now you don't make a bracha? Because you don't enjoy it? You're eating it only because of a diet. Look in the words over here. Michael she'eno oiv b'mizgeret diata. You're eating it only because you're on a diet, not because you enjoy it at all. You're eating this food just because you have to, because it's the only way to stay alive. So you make a bracha? The answer is, yeah, you make a bracha. All these foods are normal. They're normal foods. You happen to have a preference against them. You still make a bracha on those foods. In Gimel, you have over here another very important idea. The halacha is, and we don't have time to really get into it, although there's what to talk about, the Gemara tells us that if a person drinks water, it's not so obvious that you make a bracha. Water is tasteless. It's really, it doesn't satiate either. It's just something you need to drink in order to stay alive. Now, there are times when a person's thirsty. So the Gemara says when a person is thirsty and they're parched and they are dehydrating and they drink water, so then they certainly make a shahakal because they're drinking it for their system. They're drinking it in order to satisfy, to quench their thirst. However, if a person is not thirsty, they have something in their throat, like they literally have something in their throat. They're choking on something. So in order to get it down, they drink a cup of water to try to get it down. Do you make a bracha on that water? The answer is no. Where else does that have application? Taking a pill. You're taking a pill. Very good, Rabbi Schreiber. You're taking a pill, and you want to take a couple of Advil. Let's just say 4 or 5 Advil. So you're going to swallow. It's hard to get 4 or 5 Advil down without water. So you use the water to get it down. You make a bracha on that water. You're not drinking it in a way that you're enjoying it. You're not drinking it for quenching your thirst. You're drinking it to get the thing down your throat. That does not require a bracha. Says Rav Asher Weiss, and here he writes about it very shorthand. If you look in the footnote I brought for you, that he spoke about this more at length in the previous Tshuva and Simen Yud Zayin, Rav Asher Weiss says, what about the following case? Let's say nowadays, you know, a kid is going out on a trip. He's going out for the day to camp or something. So you tell him, make sure to drink. Or you say to him before he leaves, hey, drink a cup of water so you don't dehydrate. So he's drinking well in advance of being thirsty. He's drinking in order to not become dehydrated, correct? It's preventative in that way. So do you make a bracha then? Okay, everyone knows the answers. What do we need Rav Asher Weiss for already? So you make a bracha then? So he says yes, you guys are correct. He says yes, although he quotes those who might disagree. But he says yes, and he says the reason is because the reason you make a bracha when you're drinking water to quench your thirst is because your body needs the water for that. That's in order to keep your body going in the regular way. It's in order to benefit your body with the water to quench your thirst, to benefit that aspect of your body, the thirst. Even if you do that preventative way, meaning to avoid having the thirst later on, that's also quenching your thirst just in advance.
How does the water with the pills differentiate from the tea with the hemp or the oil?
The water with the pills. No, because the tea... Good. So the... Because the... oil with the sweet stuff, you're saying? The oil with the sweet stuff is you're swallowing sweet stuff, which is a bracha always. The water with the pill, the water itself doesn't get a bracha because you're using it for the pill. So if you were using, let's say... But water is different because water has... Since water has no taste. So again, as example, if you would take a cup of orange juice to swallow your pill, you would have to make a bracha. So you're correct. It's just water is not a good example. Yeah. He adds over here, by the way, that if it's a hot day, or as you guys say in LA, a hot day. So if it's a hot day and you're drinking the water and you're not so thirsty, but it does cool you down, it does give you a little bit of a relief from the heat, that also would require a bracha. So it's anything that's giving that sort of relief that water tends to give. In Dalit, you have another case, Tums. Anyone here ever take Tums? I don't know. They're like little sliced chalk, right? So, but they taste like the medicine of your youth. So it tastes like the grape Tylenol, like this. I happen to be a very big, so now that's something I like. I love grape Tylenol. Happens to be, I still do. I love grape Tylenol, delicious. So you have, I like everything grape flavored. I don't like grapes though. Is that interesting? Except for wine. Well, that's not really grape flavored, but I like candy grape flavored things, like the purple Mike and Ike's. I think everyone always ditches those. They always avoid those, the purple things. I always like the purple stuff. So, yeah, so Tums. So you want to eat Tums. So apparently they have like a nice taste. Or you you have these, you know, amoxicillin when you're younger that's like bubblegum flavored. So I think that they actually are tasty again. Like you, adults don't usually like that taste. But I'm saying for a kid, it's actually tasty. It's not gross with that taste. It's actually tasty. It tastes like syrup. So in that case, would you make a bracha? So here, Rav Asher White says you might think you do because it's a tasty food. But now think about his klal, his yisod from before. The rule is not that if it tastes good, you make a bracha. The rule is that if it's normal, if it's food, if it's something that's normal to eat, you make a bracha. So here, if you're eating something that's normal for refuah, you make a bracha. But if you're eating something abnormal for refuah, even though it tastes good, you don't make a bracha. You don't make a bracha. Here, Rav Asher Weiss, I didn't put it on the sheet, but if you look in the last line before the break, Vishuv Her Uni, he says, if you look in the Dirshu Mishnah Brurahs here, they quote everything he quotes over here, but they showed me that all the poskim have different opinions about this, about medicine, making the bracha, tasty medicines. Yeah, but I wrote what I believe. What I believe is that if you have a medicine that tastes good, it's still a medicine, not a food. If it's a medicine, not a food, it doesn't get a bracha. It doesn't get a bracha. So the rule, Rav Asher Weiss says, and now we've answered all the Gemaras and all the cases. It's an amazing tshuva in that way, because he just categorized two things for us, and he answered up all the issues. If you understand that the bracha is made on real food, even if you don't enjoy it, or real food that you're enjoying, even though you're eating it for a different purpose, but not non-food that happens to taste good, then you have the answer to all of your questions, including the pills that we just got to at the end. Or not pills, but syrups and things like that. Lastly, and this is not in the same tshuva, but it's something that stuck with me for a few years, that the base measures of Usher Wise, I don't know if they still do, but they used to publish a journal, a Torah journal, called Kovetz Darkei Hora'ah. And in one of the volumes, one of the editions of this journal, was all about Inyanei Chole B'Yom Kippurim. Sick person on Yom Kippur, different halachos. So it was a short kuntres, if I recall. It was like 30-something pages, not long at all. The other ones are longer. But the last simon in that set of the tshuvas about Chola and Yom Kippur was about the following case. Imagine a person, Rachman Al-Tzlan, is in the hospital, and because of some terrible infection, so they had to remove his intestines. They had to remove his digestive tract. Rachman Al-Tzlan. So he has to stay alive by being given nutrition, nutrients, and being sustained by some sort of food, but he can't eat anymore, or you know, it doesn't mean anything to eat, it's meaningless. So what do? They hook him up with the intravenous IV or something, or sometimes they intubate with a food tube, or different, I think there are also ones that go directly into the stomach area. This probably wouldn't need that because he didn't have the digestive tract, but whatever. They had different methods, so they did it by a tube, by insertion. So in that case, the chola want to know if they're going to feed me on Yom Kippur. Am I over on eating Yom Kippur? A sad shaila. And for that matter, what if they put food in there that's not kosher? What if it's a cheeseburger mix in the IV? I never had that one, but a cheeseburger mix in the IV. Or for that matter, or for another matter, I don't know how many matters on already, do I have to make a bracha? Do I have to make a bracha? And if I don't have to make a bracha, am I never making brachas again for my entire life? This isn't changing the situation for him. So he wanted to know the answer to all of these things. So Rav Asher Weiss quotes a very, very, very famous tshuva of Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski, the Gadol Ador from Vilna, in the Tshuvas Achiezer in Chelek Gimel, where Rav Chaim Ozer suggests that there's an obvious answer to the question of intravenous feeding. He notes there's a Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kuf Gimel, which has a machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, as to what's the determinant of hana'ah for eating. What counts as having hana'ah from eating? Is it the hana'ah you get in your throat? or is the hana that you get in your innards once the food goes down? Nafkamina, no joke, the Gemara says if someone throws it up, so they enjoyed it in their throat, and then they enjoyed it a second time on the way up, but they never got it to their stomach. They never really enjoyed it in their stomach. Other cases as well. So Reb Chaim Ozer has a chiddush over there, and he basically, we don't have time to get into it, but he has a chiddush about the machlokas, and he basically explains that as long as you don't have any hana, it's not going in your throat or in your stomach, even if it ends up in your stomach, if you didn't go the direction of the throat down the tubes into your stomach, then that's not called eating, and therefore you're not chayev on Yom Kippur. However, the poskim go back and forth about how exactly to categorize it. Is it patra aval aser? You didn't eat on Yom Kippur, that you're chayev, but you're not allowed to do it. You can't set up with an IV and sit there all Yom Kippur and doing it. Or is it totally mutter? This is a discussion the poskim have. Rashi Weiss, in his classic way, he says that you can only define eating if you understand three things. They're both related. Two of them are related to what we just spoke about. One is that you need a maisa achila. You need to swallow normally. You need to put food in your mouth and throat and get it down that way. That's number one. Number two, there has to be hana'as achila, meaning you have to be satiated or satisfied by the food. So you have to eat it. You have to be satiated or satisfied. And derech achila, it has to be an enjoyable food in the taste. I mean, you have to have a good taste from it, not be disgusting. If you're missing those three things, then you're not going to be chayev from achalos asuros, he says. And he quotes various poskim on different issues regarding this. But basically what it comes out with is that if you have a case where a person is being fed intravenously through a tube on Yom Kippur, it's not eating. Because there's no ma'is achila, there's no hana'as achila. It's not eating. You're missing at least two out of three. You're missing probably all three. But you're missing two out of three. Maybe you're called satiated. I don't know. But you're missing a lot of the hagdara of what it means to be eating. So you're not going to need to be chayev on Yom Kippur. And it's totally mutter. The guy doesn't have to avoid it. He should take the food, take the sustenance on Yom Kippur. And he says the same thing is true, that you won't be yotzei mitzvos that way. That's also true. But you also don't need to worry about Yom Kippur, like I said, and the ma'achalos asuros. And you wouldn't make a bracha. There would be no bracha, berachas and on such food. So the whole time we spent in the last 40 minutes, we spoke about a case where you're eating food and getting hana, but you're not eating it. You're not, sorry. We spoke a lot in the last 40 minutes about a case where you're eating food, but you're not necessarily getting hana from it. You're not enjoying it. You don't like wine. You don't like lettuce. You don't like whatever the food is. Now we're talking about the opposite case, where you're getting the hana from food, but you're not eating it. You're not eating it. So in that case, Rashi Weiss says also that you do not have a bracha in such case. You don't have a bracha in a case where there's no achila. If it's missing the ma'isa achila, the derech achila, then even if there's some sort of hana of satiation, it doesn't require a bracha. Rashi Weiss ends... So it happens to be Rashi Weiss has a tshuva, so does Rav Schechter, has a tshuva about that during COVID that they wrote about. Maybe we could talk about that, Lina, there another time. It's a worthwhile discussion. It's relevant for brachos, but it's also relevant for matzah by the Seder. You have to taste the matzah, maror, you know, what you have to taste and what you have to eat. The difference between eating and tasting is a very good question. So the Rashi Weiss ends this tshuva, or ends that article, and we'll stop with this. He says that it comes out that this person sitting in the hospital bed, Nebuch, he's never going to make a bracha the rest of his life. He's going to sit there getting fed, and he's never going to make a bracha the rest of his life. So Rav Asher Weiss says that even though it's true that halachically speaking, he's patur from brachos, he really should take any opportunity he can to try to make a bracha, because we know a bracha is like the yisod of all living. It's recognizing Hashem in the world. It's recognizing the Creator is taking care of you. It's realizing a kadosh baruch in the bria, mande mehavi, boi lemehavi, chesida. Should be careful about brachos. So he says, ideally, this person should either think brachos in their head and try to, you know, recognize the kadosh baruch hu, or if they're able to, they could, before they eat, even if the food they're eating has nothing to do with water, if they take a sip of water and they're able to make a shahakal on it, in order to just at least satisfy the ability to make a bracha, we have to connect to Ribono Shalom. We have to find ways to understand that the food comes from Him, even when we're in dire straits and the food is coming from a tube. Even so, a person wants to recognize the Borei Olam, so he gives an advice that a person should try to find ways to focus on this, either internally or through manufacturing another reason to eat something where they need a bracha, and that way it's not to be yotze, he doesn't need a bracha, but it's at least to be connected to the idea of brachos. So those of us who have the zchus and the nes of achila, that we're able to eat and we don't have to suffer from such things, so we should avada, we should pay attention to the brachos we make. We should definitely connect to Hashem through the brachos we make, and through that create for ourselves better lives of avodas Hashem. Okay, everyone have a wonderful day. Yashakaya.